We gaan zo naar de Hemschakel, niet met worry. Good morning, everyone. And a good chodesh, not yet, for tomorrow. This month should be a transformed month, a month that will turn over from sadness to the greatest simcha, to the greatest joy. We should see it this chodesh Av. Should be really Menachem Av, which can mean two things, that the Father will comfort us, Hashem will comfort us, and that Hashem will be comforted. When He will comfort us, He will be comforted Himself. So that's the Menachem Av. We should have a complete Menachem Av. We are holding now in Perek Yud, on page Tezvav, in those Tanyas, the red one, what is it? 42. We're holding on the second page of the Perek. Okay. We're learning over here about the different types of people. Tzadikim. You know, the Tanya begins with describing various different individuals. People, you know, the Gemara refers to three personalities, three people. There are, meaning in terms of one's moral and spiritual condition. Where is a person holding in their life? So the Gemara speaks of the possibility of three possibilities. A person can either be a tzaddik, and that is a righteous person. A person can be a beinoni, which means a intermediate. Or a person can be a rasha, chas v'shalom, which means a wicked person. However, if we break it down, we learn that there is another two possibilities, because the level of tzaddik divides itself into two categories, the perfect tzaddik and the imperfect tzaddik, or as he sometimes refers to it, the tzaddik that's good to him, which is the perfect tzaddik, and the tzaddik that is bad to him, which is the incomplete tzaddik. And then the rasha also has two possibilities, someone who's called a utterly wicked person, Rasha Gamor, or Rasha She'ena Gamor, less of a Rasha. He's not that utterly wicked. Or the other name, similar to the Tzaddik, Rasha Veraloi, a Rasha that is bad to him, that is the wicked, completely wicked person, utterly wicked. Rasha Ve'ena Gamor, Rasha that is not complete in his wickedness. So that is called Rasha Vetovlo. It's a Rasha that has good to him. And the Tanya over here at the beginning, the first 12 chapters or 13 chapters, is coming to define these types of personalities. By doing that, he maps out the map of the human psyche completely. And he explains all of this based on the idea that we all possess two souls, two streams of consciousness. One soul is a godly soul. It's a consciousness that is very, very much conscious of God. It is of Hashem, conscious of Hashem, and all of its drives, all of its motivations, all of its every movement, every element coming from that soul is only Kedusha, only holiness. That soul will only instigate or prompt or stimulate us to do what Hashem wants and get closer to Hashem. But then we have a klipa soul. The klipa is the dark element within us, within every single person. And that part sees itself very much conscious of its own existence, separated from God, and sees the whole world as an entity for its own, not as a creation of Hashem that is here to serve Hashem. That's the klipa. It's a distorted vision. We are all made up from these two levels of consciousness. The question is the degree of how one stands via the other, how they stand within the human being. So what we're learning over here is that the tzaddik is a person, that's what Perek Yud is dedicated to the tzaddik. The tzaddik is the person who not only is in full control of his animal consciousness, which means that the person will never, ever, ever allow his primary desires and wants emanating from his animal soul to find expression in any form of behavior, which would mean, of course, that the person, a tzaddik, will never ever sin. That's the first thing. It's a very, 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 very extreme thing, which sometimes we're not used to hearing something like that. A tzaddik is someone who never sins. Not hardly ever sins. Never sins. Never ever will do an avera, and never fails to do a mitzvah. Every opportunity that arises to do the mitzvah, he does the mitzvah. He never ever ever, or never ever does even a minor infraction, even a little sin. We're going to wonder, how about tzaddikim, like Moshe Rabbeinu, who sinned? We're going to discuss that. That kind of sin is a complete different sin. It's not coming from animal consciousness. When we say a tzaddik never sins, we mean a sin emanating from an animal consciousness, from an unholy place within him. Sometimes circumstances are placed before a person where no matter what the person will do, because we're living in an incomplete world, no matter what they do, they will, it can't be fully perfect and fully right. That was sort of the sin that Moshe Rabbeinu did, a circumstance where either way, no matter what would be done, would be imperfect. That's the circumstances that we're in because the world is not perfect until Mashiach comes. But to say that a sin emanating from, because you have a Yetzer Hara inside of him, because of an evil inclination, a tzaddik does not sin. Never. So the tzaddik is impeccable in his thought, speech, and action. To take that even in a step further, even if it isn't sin, but to engage in an activity, to involve himself in an action, which is an animalistic action, even if it isn't a sin, to do something just in order to have physical pleasure is unheard of in the world of the tzaddik. The tzaddik never ever acts in his life just in order to have a pleasure and a delight, as simple as eating a piece of cake or drinking a tea just for the sake of, this feels good, this makes me feel comfortable. That is not in the world of the tzaddik, because that experience, as we learned earlier, is an unholy experience. Why is it unholy? Exactly because of that, because it's not holy. Why should it be holy? Why should someone drinking a cup of tea be holy? What's holy about that? Holiness is attachment to God. What is attaching to God by drinking a cup of tea? Oh, it's so innocent, it's just a cup of tea. Now, you can make it holy, of course, is if you add a little holy spice to it. If you add, as you're making tea, people put in the tea bag, they put in a little sugar, and then you can make it holy if you put a little holiness into it, which means a little intention that this experience right now is a connected to Hashem. God is taken into the equation. After all, he should. Why not? He is the water. He is the tea bag. He is the sugar. He is everything that's there. So why ignore him? So if the person takes the moment to recognize that, Hashem is the reality of this tea bag, Hashem is the reality of this water, Hashem is the reality of this cup that's holding it, and Hashem is the reality of my mouth and everything in me. And if I'm doing that, taking God into consideration and saying, well, what kind of divine purpose and achievement can there be in me and this tea coming into interaction one with each other? Well, if I have this tea, it will calm my mind, it will add maybe a little caffeine and awaken me a little bit, and so I can learn better, I can study better, do a mitzvah. Oh, then it's holy. So that is holiness. But any act devoid of that is unholy. If it's unholy, it's klipa. That's it. Klipa is anything that is covering on the truth that einoid movade, there's nothing but God. The tzaddik never ever in his thought, speech, and action will behave in a klipa diga fashion, in an unholy fashion. It's quite a high standard for tzaddik, but that's the standard that we get from Tanya. And even though it's very, very, very hard for ordinary people to ever achieve this, and we're going to learn later in Tanya, it's quite impossible for people to achieve the level of tzaddik, but it's a good measuring thing to at least know where we are. If a person begins to imagine himself that I'm a tzaddik, he can ask himself a question, is it possible for me to sin? If it's possible for him to do an avera or to just enjoy themselves physically without any divine intention, one thing you know, you're not a tzaddik. But the tzaddik is more than that. That does not even make a tzaddik yet. Because the Beinoni, as we're going to learn later in Tanya, is also someone. An intermediate person is also someone who is governed only by his godly consciousness and not by his animal consciousness. Even an intermediate person. When is a person entering into the realm of tzaddik? Into the whole dimension of being a tzaddik, the person only enters into the tzaddik dimension when it goes beyond behavior, the change is a deep change taking place in his heart, in his inner consciousness. The tzaddik not only doesn't he sin, but doesn't experience any temptation for sin. Doesn't even have a desire. It's outside of his world. He doesn't feel, doesn't have even have a desire to have any, to sin, and even to have any worldly physical pleasures. There is no more struggle in the world of the tzaddik. As long as a person is struggling between good and bad, between these two realms of consciousness, holy consciousness and unholy consciousness, he's not a tzaddik. He can be a beinoni. The beinoni is experiencing a ferocious battle, a constant battle. There are these subconscious drives emerge into his conscious stream of thought, and he immediately rejects it. That's what the beinoni does, as we're going to see soon. He immediately, as soon as he feels an urge to do something wrong, he says, his alarms go off, beep, 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 beep. Instantly, he fights, he pushes the thought out, and he doesn't allow the thought to linger. That's why he's a beinoni, he's not a rasha, because he's always very, very cautious, he's never sinning. However, the thought occurs to him. It does arise in his mind, it does come up, thoughts, oy, I want to do this, I want to do that, it comes up. He just shuts it down. He neutralizes his desires and his wants. The tzaddik is a step deeper than that. Not a step deeper. The tzaddik is way beyond that. The tzaddik, v'arta hara mikirbecha, has eradicated the evil from inside of him that it doesn't even occur. Doesn't even ever think of doing, it's unthinkable. Doesn't occur to him to do an aver. However, we learned in last class, in tzaddikim itself, there are two major categories. Both of them don't experience any desire for sin whatsoever. There's no struggle. But in the eradication of bad that's within them, the question is that eradication complete and thorough, or is it incomplete? Which means in the incomplete tzaddik, they've purged and taken out, extracted the evil from within them to the point that they can't be conscious of it. They don't ever feel it. But there is still a little vestige, a little left of unholiness buried within their sub-subconsciousness. The complete tzaddik is someone who has uprooted the evil so thoroughly that none of it is left. There's no bad within him. There isn't one negative cell within him. The animal soul isn't there at all. He is thoroughly holy. Not only he behaves holy, he is holy. Every fiber of his being is holiness, because his animal consciousness has been completely eradicated from the negative, and the next stage is it gets converted into holiness. That's the difference. Now, how do you measure this? If you're not conscious, if both the incomplete tzaddik and the complete tzaddik don't have any struggle anymore, there is no conscious feelings anymore arising, negative, conscious, unholy thoughts and drives coming up in their mind to tempt them to do an aver, they don't feel it. So how will someone know what's happening in the subconscious? We don't have are they going to go to a psychologist or someone to try to dig out or put him go through hypnosis to bring up dormant, latent feelings that are hidden deep, deep inside? That's not the case. So Rav Tzaddik, actually, in one of his sarim, says an interesting thing. One of the ways of measuring that, is it buried deep inside, is what happens when they're asleep. See, as long as you're awake, the mind is in full control. The conscious mind can control all the stimuli, everything that is being, so there is a filter. The person's consciousness, the mind, acts as a filter and instantly can push away, even if the person isn't realizing it, but there's a certain measure of control. When you're asleep, then the guard is down because the mind isn't really in operation. So then the base feelings that are in the subconscious can come up. So he says the difference between the complete tzaddik and the incomplete tzaddik is in the dreams. What kind of dreams? In the complete tzaddik, there is only holy dreams. In the incomplete tzaddik, there could be some element of imperfection coming in their dream. That's one measurement. The Tanya gives another way of measuring the difference between these two things, and that is as follows. In terms of negative, they can't measure it. Because, again, the negativity in the incomplete tzaddik is so subtle, it's so buried, it's so covered up by Kedusha, that it will never be felt. So how do they measure it? The question is like this. If you have completely converted the animal, the ra, the negative, into good, then If the person has achieved it one wholly, then, I'm sorry, if the one has completely eradicated the evil, then the bad will become good. The Nefesh HaBahamas itself will become a force of holiness. By the incomplete tzaddik, he silences his animal soul, but he doesn't convert it. Which means his avodas Hashem, his service to Hashem, is coming from half of him. He is, meaning it's his godly soul that is active all day long in pushing him to doing mitzvahs. What happens with his animal soul? His animal soul has been tranquilized. His animal soul has been put to sleep. And put to sleep, he's in a coma. He's in a sleep that he doesn't even wake up from time to time. He's out cold. But his drive in his life is coming only from his neshama, not from his animal soul. However, the complete tzaddik, being that he has eradicated every bit of negativity from his yetzahara, from the nefesh HaBahamas. So what happens? When the nefesh HaBahamas doesn't have any hold on the klipa, it must transform. It must turn around and become a force for Kedusha. Because it can't just be dead. It has to find other expression. So if there is no outlet towards the unholy, it becomes a force of Kedusha. And what happens in a person's life? What happens is that a person's experience in Kedusha becomes doubly strong. The potency, the force, the drive to do a mitzvah is coming from both his souls. So it has an intensity far, far, far greater than the incomplete tzaddik. Because his love to Hashem, and which means his performance of mitzvahs, are coming from both sides of his being. From his neshama, and from his yetzahara, and from his v'haftas Hashem alakecha b'chol levavcha b'shnei yetzarecha, with both your inclinations. And the animal soul, it's not only double, it's not only twice as strong, it's more than double. Why? Because the animal soul, being that he's a behema, he's an animal, its passions, by its very nature, is very, very intense. So when you love Hashem with your godly soul, there's a certain calmness in that love. When you love Hashem with your animal soul too, there is a certain heat and intensity that is lacking in the neshama, that's there in the animal soul. And that's the passion that the complete tzaddik has, way beyond the incomplete tzaddik, because of the transformation. So we can say something like this. When the incomplete tzaddik davens, he's davening with one soul. When the incomplete tzaddik eats, he's also eating with one soul. It's only his godly soul. He has shut down any type of interest in just having pleasure and delight. His animal soul is completely out of the equation. The complete tzaddik, when he davens with both his souls to cleave, to connect to Hashem. And when he eats, he also eats with both his souls, even when he's engaging in a physical thing. But the content of his eating, the content of any physical activity that he does, is completely godly. There is nothing earthy. There's nothing animalistic about it. It's doing. He's literally, when the tzaddik is eating, he is standing in the Beis HaMikdash and he's offering a korban to Hashem. That's what he's doing. There is no, and there isn't even a struggle. Nothing of like he's just, because by him he's lifting physical elements towards godliness. That's it. That's the only thing that occurs to him. As we learned in the last class, any type of possibility of pleasure for the sake of pleasure, doing something physical just to enjoy, is utterly abhorrent to him. It's unthinkable. It's to us, just like cannibalism, for instance, to us, is unthinkable. It's not something we have to struggle. It's not something that we even have to like fight. And it's yuck, and it wouldn't even occur to us. The same is the world of the complete tzaddik. By him, it's an unthinkable thing to have any kind of connection to physical pleasure without serving Hashem. Why? Because he loves Hashem, as we learned in last class. He loves Hashem with such intense love. Therefore, anything that's blocking Hashem, he hates with an utter hatred. Just like we spoke last week, if someone or something stands against someone that you love very much, if someone is someone who chas v'shalom wants to harm your child or harm someone you love, you hate that person very, very, very much because they're harming someone you love. So the tzaddik loves Hashem so much, anybody klipa that stands against Hashem, he hates with utter despise. And since he hates the klipa with utter hatred, he is disgusted by every single thing that comes from the klipa, from the unholy. And therefore, material pleasures that are not for the sake of serving Hashem is abhorrent. And I want to clarify one thing that could have come wrong. I saw from a question that was asked after the shir last time. I just want to clarify a very important thing. It's not like the tzaddik walks around and looks at this world and is nauseous all day long, because he sees physical pleasures and he looks at the gashmis of this world quite on the contrary. The tzaddik is in love with this world. The tzaddik loves when he sees an apple tree. He loves when he sees a waterfall. He's taken by every. He loves it when he sees people. Everything in this world, but by him, everything he sees the godly content of that. He doesn't see its klipa, shell of it. He sees it with its neshama. So when he sees any beautiful physical thing, he sees how beautiful Hashem is. It's not, and that's his instant reaction to it. There's nothing else to it. Like the Baal Shem Tov writes that if a person has any kind of a temptation, a person, for instance, sees a woman and it catches his attention. And so the Baal Shem Tov writes that the way a person elevates that attraction is his reaction is, wow, look how beautiful one of the creations of Hashem is. Suddenly he's overtaken with such a love for God, because can you imagine the beauty of God? If God is the source of this, and this is just one tiny, minuscule creation of it. Now, our mind, even if we were to do that kind of a cheshbon, it's a cheshbon, it's a calculation. And Tanya is going to explain later that most people shouldn't make calculations like that. Just try to shut the thought out of your mind, because if you allow yourself into that, into the world of looking into it, then that is very, very dangerous. And most of the time, the klipa will grab the person before the person will be able to elevate it. That's not what one should be doing. But by the tzaddik, that's his reaction. That's what he sees. Doesn't see anything else. Sometime I think in the 1990s, in the early 90s, by the Lubavitch Rebbe, there used to be dollars every Sunday, and people came from all over the world to receive dollars. And there was the men's line and there was the women's line, and people would go through. At one time, the Israeli Miss Israel was visiting New York, and she came to, and someone, they brought her, part of her, one of her visitations. It was very, very popular then to come, to go visit, in Israel called Harabi, everybody was gonna go see the Rebbe. So this woman also came. She came with a whole entourage, and she came to see the Rebbe. As she came by, they introduced her as the Malkat HaYofi in Israel and so forth to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe gave her a dollar, and he told her how Sheker Achein Vehevel HaYofi, and the real beauty of a person is the beauty of their mitzvahs and the Ma'asim Tovim. And he said, if you're physically beautiful, it's because of your, you have the potential of beauty in your neshama, and you should bring it out in mitzvah. And that's right, he spoke to her, and he gave her the dollar and so forth. Whoa, is Gavon in Eretz Yisrael, it became a big muhuma by those who were not that fond of the Rebbe. And they made a big tumult. Hey, see, the Rebbe is talking to this woman, Malkatai. This became fuel for attack, and to say, look at him. So the Amshin of a Rebbe, who was a very, very big tzaddik in Eretz Yisrael, when he heard this, said, these people who are criticizing the tzaddik, he says, they have no idea the psyche of where a tzaddik lives in, the world and where a tzaddik lives in. They're projecting their own thoughts, their own struggles, their own difficulties on the tzaddik, and thinking that he's living in their world. Chassidim had a story for this. It's an amazing story, a beautiful story that they would tell, just to understand the difference, that there was a cow. And the cow, there's a woman, she owned the cow, and she had her house, and every she would always feed the cow. Every morning she would take out a bucket of water to the cow, and the cow would have its food, and he would drink the water. One time, every Sunday, however, was the happiest day for the cow. The cow would always wait for Sunday morning. Why would he wait for Sunday morning? Because the woman would clean her Shabbos dishes. So she would wipe the chalent and all that with the water. It wasn't like a good drainage. So then she would take the water out that she cleaned the dishes. It was a shortage of water. Take that, all the grease and all the yolk, and she would put it out for the cow. And the cow, this was his most delicious drink of the week, was all the grease and all the chazarai that went into that thing, because this was the tastiest water. Every week, the cow would be waiting for the water to come out for the Sunday morning. One week, for some reason, they were invited out, the family, they didn't make Shabbos at home. So on Sunday morning, the woman came out with a regular bucket of water, and it wasn't that delicious water that the cow was used to. So the cow sticks his tongue into it and begins to drink, And he gets very upset. And he's saying, yeah. And he thinks, ah, the cow is in his mind. He's thinking, look, he says, she became smart already. Instead of giving me the water, she's drinking it on her own, and she's giving me the other thing. Now that's the mind of a cow. It says, when we try to look at tzaddikim and great people with the mind of a cow, so we think that the types of temptations and the types of desires and things that are even appealing to us and meaningful are something that we have to struggle with, that the mind of the tzaddik operates in that world. The tzaddik is not within that realm at all. There isn't, I'm talking about a real tzaddik, and there is no struggle. The tzaddik that we're learning about over here in Tanya, someone who has converted himself completely, that there isn't any more, any vestige, any tiny bit of, because again, he uprooted that entire consciousness within him. And that's said about every tzaddik, not even the complete tzaddik, even the incomplete tzaddik. And definitely the complete tzaddik, there is nothing of klipa left. There is only kedusha. The only thing he sees, the only reality that exists in the world of the tzaddik is kedusha. Now we're going to learn inside. The last thing we learned was that that the tzaddikim, the incomplete tzaddik, there are many, many, many levels in incomplete tzaddik, meaning many levels to what degree subconsciously they have eradicated the evil. Because again, we're saying the incomplete tzaddik has a little bit unholiness left inside of it. The question is, and again, he's not conscious of it. Because if he's conscious of it, he's no more a tzaddik. He's outside of the tzaddik club. He's in the world of the Beinoni. He's not a member anymore in that world of tzaddikim. So we have to be talking about a type of negativity that isn't sensed. Just like as he gave the mashal of when you have non-kosher food that mixes with kosher food, it gets batal. Batal, annulled, nullified as if it doesn't exist, if there is 60 times as much of kosher than the non-kosher. But in that itself, there's very degrees. It can be buttled by 60, nullified by 60 times the amount, or it can be by 100, or it can be by 1,000. The Gemara uses a term, afilu be'elef le'batel, and berivava, 10,000. So there is various degrees of how minute the unholiness is left over by the tzaddik that he doesn't know about, but how little it is. Probably I would think that when Rav Tzaddik was speaking about having it in a dream, coming in a dream, that would be someone who is just entering into the world of tzaddik. By that person, it can emerge in dreams. But people who have already gone deeper, deeper, deeper into the world of tzaddik, have flushed out the evil, even on a much deeper level, out of 1,000 times as much kedusha than the klipa, that it's not, those people wouldn't even feel it in a dream. But the fact that you're not feeling it in a dream doesn't mean it's not there. The only way to measure if it's not there is if the negative turned into good. Because it will only turn into good if there isn't even one tiny bit, if it doesn't even have one little trace of negativity in it. However, on the perfect tzaddik, he says the perfect tzaddik is, there aren't many levels. He says 80,000 tzaddikim, or rows of tzaddikim, stand in front of Hashem. That's the incomplete tzaddik. But on the perfect tzaddik, there are very, very few. And that's what Reb Shimon bar Yochai said about himself. He said, Ra'isi b'nei aliyah, I have seen people of high stature, men of high ascent, of high level. Umu'atem hem, they are very few. The Gemara says it in contrast to what it says earlier, that there are 80,000 rows of tzaddikim that stand in front of Hashem. The Gemara says, however, there are, the Reb Shimon bar Yochai said, b'nei aliyah, people that are called men of high stature, they're only a few. And Reb Shimon bar Yochai begins to speak who they are. And he said, if there are 1,000, he says, count me and my son amongst them. If there are 100, count me and my son amongst them. If there are 10, you'll count me and my son amongst them. If there are 2, it's me and my son. And if there's only 1, it's myself. This is what Reb Shimon bar Yochai says. That you see how these people are living in a whole different world, that they can speak about themselves in that way, and it's not pride, because they're so identityless, their whole existence is the reality of Hashem, that they don't have an existence other than Hashem. They're just saying the emes of what it is, because there's no ego whatsoever. They have completely attained the level where there is no I. Their I is Hashem. They're melted into Him. So they're just speaking of this reality called Reb Shimon bar Yochai. Who is he? This is what he is. But anyways, he says over here, Ach al maila tzaddik gomer, on the maila, on the level of complete tzaddik, hu sha'amar Reb Shimon bar Yochai. This is about who Reb Shimon bar Yochai said, Ra'isi b'nei aliyah, I have seen men, B'nei Aliyah, of high stature. V'hamu'atim, they are just few. Now he's going to explain that this level called B'nei Aliyah is the level that we're referring to as perfect tzaddik, tzaddik gomer, complete tzaddik. As he explains why. Shelechein nikra'im B'nei Aliyah, the reason why they are called men of ascent, men of high level. Why? He says it's connected to what we spoke about before, because they're called Aliyah. Aliyah means to elevate. They've elevated their darkness. See, the other tzaddikim have neutralized their darkness. They have silenced their darkness. They have pushed the darkness down and diminished it to a point that it's not interfering. It's not in any way a factor in their life. But they haven't converted it. That means that the ra has not become toiv. Of course, every person converts bad to good. Every time we took a mitzvah, we're taking a physical object and we're converting it to good. We're using that's what we're here in this world to do, continuously to transform darkness to light. But that's the darkness that's in the world outside of us, and certain powers of our body we can transform to good. But we're talking the very, very consciousness itself of unholiness, the very root of our animal consciousness, that is unconvertible to most people. Even to tzaddikim, they don't convert it, they diminish it and silence it. However, he says, Shelechein nekram b'nei aliyah, the reason we're holding four lines before the end of page Tezvav. Why are they called b'nei aliyah, men of high ascent? Shemahapchem hara, they convert the bad, umalam oisai l'kadusha, and they elevate it to holiness, because and there is no more unholy inside of them. Kedeisa b'zoyar, as stated in Zoyar, b'agdama, in the Hagdama of the Zohar, Shekesha, in the introduction, Shekesha Ratzer Reb Chiya, La'alois Lehechol Reb Shimon Bayechoy. When Reb Chiya one time wanted to ascend, after Reb Shimon Bayechoy passed away when he was in Gan Eden, Reb Chiya wanted to ascend up to the chamber of Reb Shimon Bayechoy. Shama Kola Nafik. He heard an announcement. He heard a voice coming out from that Hechal. Va'omar, and it said from the chamber where Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was, it said, "Man min chayin, di chashoyche mahapchen l'nahoira." Who amongst you, whom that darkness that he has transformed darkness to light, v'ta'amin meridu lemiska, and that they taste the bitter as sweet, which means they have transformed bitterness into sweetness, ad lo yesen hacha, before they came here. Meaning those who have accomplished this while they were alive in the physical world, that they've transformed darkness to light and the bitter to sweet, only those are permitted to enter into this Heichal. This Heichal is a place, this is a chamber in Gan Eden, where only people that have converted darkness to light and bitterness to sweetness. Because to enter into a Heichal means to experience the godliness of that place, and you can only do it if you're a vessel. And being that this is the Gan Eden of a tzaddik, like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who was, as we said before, a tzaddik gomer, a complete tzaddik, a tzaddik v'toivloi, because he has taken the ra inside of it and completely transformed it to good. So that's why they told Reb Chiya that there's no entry over here, only people who have achieved this. So we see from here that the reason they're called B'nei Aliyah is because they are maila, they elevate the ra to good, which goes together with what we said earlier in the interpretation of why they're called tzaddik v'toivloi. V'toivloi is they've taken the ra and made it good. There's only goodness in them. But now he continues. V'oid nikrayim b'nei aliyah. There is another reason why they are called, these tzaddikim are called b'nei aliyah, men of great ascent, mipnei, and that is because shegam avidosam b'pchinas vasei tov, that also their action, their avoda, their service in doing good, b'kiyam atayru mitzvaseho, in the fulfillment of Torah and mitzvahs, which means in Torah study and in the performance of mitzvahs, hu litzayrich gevoya, it is for a very high need, for a very high thing. Umayla mayla, and a very, very high quality, adroi mamaylas, until the highest of qualities, the highest of levels. What does he mean? What is he saying? He's saying like this. Tzadikim, great... These people that are called B'nai Aliyah, these tzaddikim gemurim, the meaning of the word B'nai Aliyah, men of great ascent, is measuring both sides of their Avodas Hashem. We know that Avodas Hashem divides itself into two parts. Sur Meira, turning away from evil, and Asay Tov, in doing good. So, to us, ordinary people, let's measure what is the quality of our Sur Meira, turning from evil. Turning from evil to us means simply, we have an urge to do an Avera, our animal soul is suggesting for us, our Yetzer Hara is suggesting for us to sin. Our Avodah of Sur Meira is when we're filled with a powerful desire and a craving and a strong urge or a lust to do something bad, to hold ourselves back and not to do it. Okay, that's the Sur Meira. Now, to go deeper than that, that we shouldn't even feel these feelings, to push the thought out instantly when it comes, that's already that's a super accomplishment. But to go even deeper than that, that we shouldn't even feel these thoughts, it's out of our league. Our Sur Meira is at least refraining from doing the Aver of a Poel Mamish, in literally in actuality. To eradicate it from our inner hearts, that's beyond us, beyond normal people, regular. Okay. We have to work on it slowly, we chip away at it slowly in our life, but it's not necessarily a very achievable goal, at least not in the near future, for most people. Now, it takes a lifetime of work to minimize the ra. Now, our Asay Tov, our doing of good, we do good, we do mitzvahs. Our work in Asay Tov is that we should do the mitzvah with a little thoughtfulness. We should do the mitzvah with a desire, with a Havas Hashem, which means like this, why are we doing this mitzvah? Because we want to get close to Hashem. Because getting close to Hashem. Now, for a lot of us, especially people who have been born with Torah mitzvahs, the challenge in Asay Tov is not to do it habitually, not to do it mechanically, not to do it like a robot, but to do it with at least a little thoughtfulness. I am doing this because it's a mitzvah. I am doing this because I want to listen to Hashem. Even the thought, I am doing this to go to Olam Haba, is already a certain refined thought. It's an elevated thought in the sense that what? At least a person is thinking of something more spiritual, something godly. Okay? But the higher level is to do it with a desire to cleave to Hashem. That's more important. I want to do this because I'm making a connection to Hashem. This is Hashem's desire. I'm connecting to Him through doing this thing. This is for ordinary, this is for us. By tzaddikim gemurim, by complete tzaddikim, their sur meira, their turning from bad, and their asay tov is completely different. Let's see why. Sur meira, we said before, means by them, not just turning away from bad, meaning not only don't they sin in actuality, not, but deeper than that, they've eradicated, there isn't, the Sur Meira is even on an emotional level. There is no Ra inside of them. There is no temptation at all to completely move. They've eradicated the evil, that there isn't even an inner passion, an inner desire for them to do an Avera. And then the next step is Sur Meira, they turned around the Ra. They turned the Ra itself, that it became good. It became a power for good. And that's why they're called B'nai Aliyah. They've elevated the Ra to good. Now, when we go to their Asay Tov, to their doing of good, what kind of doing of good do they have? What's their Asay Tov? What motivates their good? So he says, by perfect tzaddikim, their love of Hashem is so strong that they're doing good not because of their benefit, that by doing a mitzvah, they're going to cleave to Hashem. They're going to be attached. They're going to get a connection. But they're doing good because through the performance of a mitzvah, this is something that's giving Hashem pleasure. In other words, there isn't any thought of their own pleasure and their own delight. Now, to us, we in a sense are quite close to this madrega of the perfect tzaddik because, let's understand why, because we have so little appreciation and understanding what means getting close to Hashem. So to us, okay, don't think about getting close to Hashem. Think about Hashem's pleasure that He's getting out of it. It's not such a hard trade-off, because when we're thinking of getting close to Hashem, we're not tingling with ecstasy, with joy, with pleasure. But the thing is like this: a tzaddik who is a refined soul feels his neshama is burning with desire, with passion to get close. And when you do a mitzvah, he feels the pleasure. He feels the connection. The pleasure of godliness is such an unimaginable pleasure and delight, to the point that tzaddikim are at a point when they're doing a mitzvah where they might expire. Literally, their body can't handle it. They come close to a point where they might just pass out. Pass out because of the intensity of the pleasure that they're experiencing. The perfect tzaddik who experiences this pleasure to the utmost of pleasure, nevertheless, this is not at all his consideration of why he does the mitzvah. It's not to experience the highest form of sensation and pleasure. He puts that all to the side and does the mitzvah only for one reason, because this is giving nachas to Hashem. This is his pleasure and his delight is irrelevant. He doesn't even consider himself in the whole thing. That's why they're called B'nai Aliyah, because their doing of good is for a higher purpose. It's for the sake of Hashem, not for the sake of their own mitzvahs. So that's the B'nai Aliyah element as it relates to the Asay Tov, to the doing of good. As he says, let's read the words again. He says, "B'pchenas v'asay toiv, the doing of good, b'kiyam ha-toyra mitzvah, the fulfillment of Torah mitzvahs, hu l'tzayrech gavaya, it's for the sake of a higher thing, u'mayla mayla, and for a very, very high thing, a very high quality, adroi ma'maylas, to the highest of qualities." And meaning to say, v'loy k'dei l'dofka bo yizbarach, their motivation and their desire is not that they should cleave to Hashem, b'lvad, alone. What does that mean? Like the incomplete tzaddik. An incomplete tzaddik, when he's doing the mitzvah, is thinking about getting close to Hashem, his own benefit, his own pleasure. They're not thinking of that pleasure. To satiate, to quench the thirst of their soul that is thirsting for Hashem. Like it says, how do we know that when someone is thirsting for Hashem, you fulfill that thought by doing a mitzvah? It says, Hoy kol tzama, the Navi says out, Hoy kol tzama, those that are thirsty, l'chu l'mayim, go to water. And Torah is called water. So for a person who is spiritually attuned, and therefore is thirsting for godliness, ani kirvas alekim li toiv, close to Hashem is good for me. So they run with a passion, with a desire, and study Torah, and do a mitzvah, to cleave and bond with Hashem. K'ma shekasa b'makam achar, as stated elsewhere, how doing of the mitzvah satiates this burning desire in a tzaddik to cleave to Hashem. Ella, rather, kedipishu b'tikunim. Rather, like it is explained, what then? They're not doing it for this purpose. But rather, they're doing it as explained in the tikkun of the Zohar, the tikkunim of the Zohar. It says like this, a type of performance of a mitzvah, it says like this, eizahu chassid, who is considered a chassid, a pious person, ha-mischassid imkoinoi, someone who does chesed with his creator. Which means all of his performance of mitzvahs is because he wants to do kindness to Hashem. He's doing it out of love for Hashem. He's doing kindness with God. He's doing something for Hashem. And the Zohar continues, what does it mean? Him is chased im koinai. He does kindness with his creator. Why are we referring to Hashem as kono? Kono means the one who bought him or acquired him. Because the word koinai also comes from the word kan. And kan means a nest. Eizahu chased. Who is a chassid, the Zohar says, Hamis chassid, one who does chesed, he's doing kindness, im koinoi, with his creator, im kan delay, with his nest. Whose nest? With God's nest. What does it mean to do kindness with God's nest? Who is God's nest? What's Hashem's nest? As he explains, liyachto kutshibirichu ushchinte betachtainim. To cause about the performance of a mitzvah, the motivation in the mitzvah, is in order to bring about the unification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. What does that mean? It means basically is what we're learning in the Shabbos Shiurim for the past couple of weeks, that the whole point of Torah and mitzvahs and the objective of the Jewish people in this world is to bring Hashem down into this world, to make this world into a home for Hashem. That's the idea of it all. And the tzaddik is so devoted to this mission, to this purpose, of rectifying and elevating this world and turning this world into a home for Hashem. And that's his only concern in the performance of mitzvah. Because that's what Hashem desires. Hashem wanted to have a home in this world. So he is dedicated completely without any other thought. That's it. He wants to fulfill Hashem's desire. That concept is called doing a chesed with Hashem's nest. Why is it called doing a chesed with Hashem's nest? It's also called causing a yichud, a unification between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. Why is that? The Shekhinah is called God's nest. Let's understand why. So to understand that, we first need to preface a little bit, what is the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shekhinah? The Arizal instituted that before every mitzvah, we should say, L'shem Yichud, we are here doing this mitzvah for the sake of causing a yichud, a unification, between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. What does this mean, to make a yichud between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah? So as we learned many times, Shekhinah is the element of godliness that is shochein b'tachtonim. It's the level of Elokus, the level of Hashem, that has been invested into creation when Hashem created the world. Sometimes the Shekhinah is referred to the Devar Hashem, the word of Hashem. How did Hashem create the world? Basara mamarois nivra olam. Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. So those 10 utterances are expressions of energy. They're words that Hashem spoke. Those words have entered into the creation, have been imbued into the creation to create the world. That's the reason why the Dvara, and as the Baal Shem Tov says, those words continue to imbue the creation every moment with life and existence. If those words were to depart and go out of the creation would become back nothing. So Hashem has projected energy of himself and put it into the creation, and that's the Olam Hadibur, the world of speech, that constitutes the energy of the world. Okay? Now the Dibur of Hashem, that's also called Shekhinah. Why is it called Shekhinah? Because it's that element of God that is dwelling within the creation. It resides within the world. There is a little crumb of the Shekhinah in this table, because without that, the table couldn't exist. There's a little crumb in the Shekhinah in every tree, in every braid of glass, and every grain of sand, in the oceans, in the mountains, in all of the creation, in us. There is a little part of the Shekhinah that's within it. So the Shekhinah is what's shochein in the world. Now we understand that the degree of energy that the world can hold, how much energy can the world contain? How much? Only a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of Hashem's infinite power. Because the creation, as enormous as the creation is, as majestic as the creation is, magnificent the creation is, it has a limit. It's a finite. Hashem is infinite. So the amount of godliness that can come into the creation is only a minute thing. That's why the Shekhinah is a tiny little bit of Hashem. It's a ray of Hashem's light. A little bit. That's it. That's the Shekhinah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the other hand, Kadosh comes from the word Kadosh, holy. Holy means transcendental, separated. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referring to the level of Elokus, Hashem's light, Hashem himself, as he is infinitely higher than the creation. So we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then we have the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is within the world. Hashem's desire is that we should bring the marriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. That the godly light that is higher than the world, the infinite light, Hashem himself, should unite with the Shekhinah, which means the infinite should come down and reside within the Shekhinah. Now this unification can happen in two ways. One way would be devastating and horrific and should never happen. The other one is the ultimate purpose of creation. The unholy way would be that the Kala, the Shekhinah, would go to the Chasan. What would that mean? That would mean that the light of the Shekhinah that has been imbued within the world should go out of the world. Because we put one more thing we need to say is that the Shekhinah feels very claustrophobic in the creation. The Shekhinah was once part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Chava was part of Adam HaRishon, was once part of the infinite light. See, everything that happens, it's amazing how every story of the Torah reflects a deeper process. The creation of Chava and the separating of Chava, taking a rib from Chava and separating and creating Chava as a separate entity, is really also reflecting the process of creation. Adam is referring to Hashem, and the Shekhinah is a little part of Hashem that was separated and became a separate entity. And the point over here is to reunite them; they should come together again in marriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. But one way of the Shekhinah feels very claustrophobic, stuck within the creation, because the world, the narrow confinements, are holding and are constraining compared to the infinite light that she was once part of. So one way would be that the Shekhinah would extract herself from the garments of the world and go back to be reabsorbed in Hashem. But if she goes back to be reabsorbed in Hashem, then poof goes all of the creation. The creation loses its existence immediately. Hashem didn't want that. What Hashem wants is that the Shekhinah, and through us, we are part of the Shekhinah, the Jewish people, what we should do is, we should draw him down into her world. We should bring the HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world of the Shekhinah, that Hashem should descend into the world with all of its infinite, with all of his infinity, not compromising any bit of himself, so to speak, squeeze himself into this world of the Shekhinah. Because Hashem transcends the infinite and the finite equally. And therefore he's able to come down and become part, be within this world. That's going to be accomplished when Mashiach comes, when Hashem is going to be fully in this world. That means a dira betachtainim. Hashem wants to live in the lower worlds. That's the world of the Shekhinah, is the lower dimension. Hashem wants to come down and live over here. That's the purpose of all of Torah and Mitzvahs. To bring down the Shekhinah, to bring down HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'yachta kutshebirichu u'shchinte, to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu down into the Shekhinah. It's called creating this cosmic marriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah. Now, the perfect tzaddik, when he does mitzvahs, that's his only concern. The only thing he wants in the mitzvah is not his personal light that is going to fill his soul with incredible pleasure and unbelievable ecstasy and bliss. It's true, it's going to happen. And he really feels the pleasure, but he doesn't care about that because he's so devoted to one thing, to Hashem's desire, to fulfilling what the Eibishter wants, that's on his mind, to bring about this yichud. Let's read it again. Oh, I'm sorry, just one more thing. That's called doing a chesed im kan delay with the kan, the nest of Hashem. The nest of the Hashem is the Shekhinah because she is nestled in this world. She nests in this world, and that's called a nest, because that's going to facilitate now Hashem himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the masculine dimension of God, can come down and dwell within the Shekhinah, which means coming down and dwell in his nest. So doing a chesed to the Shekhinah, whose husband isn't with her, so to speak, and we do a chesed by bringing her husband back. That's why we know the time of Galus is called, we're going to say in Eicha, hopefully we're not going to say it, Hoysa Kalmana. The Shekhinah remained like a widow whose husband has left her. And as the Chazal say, not like an almana, but ke'isha shaholcha baylon l'medina sayam. Like a woman whose husband went to the l'medina sayam. He left her, he went traveling far away, and he's not home. So she's a living widow. So the Shekhinah is in that state, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not dwelling in this world. The infinite light is not present. And our job is, in the days of Mashiach, to bring the husband back to his wife, to the Shekhinah. So it says over here, Ezo Chesed, Hamas Chesed Im Koinei, someone who does Chesed with his Im Kandelei, with his nest. Liyachta Kutchebirichu Shchintei Betachtainim, to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu down in town. Kamasha Kasa Bereya Mehem, the Pasha Seise, as it says in the portion of the Zohar called Reya Mehem, written by Moshe Rabbeinu, faithful shepherd in Pasha Seise, Kibrod, and Moshe Rabbeinu can write this because Moshe Rabbeinu was a perfect tzaddik, and he lived his life like he's going to describe right now. Kibrod de ishtadl baser aviv ime, like a child who is working for his parents, for his father and his mother. Derachim loin, he loves them. Yatir migarme, he loves them more than his own body. V'nafshe, and more than his own soul. V'ruche, and more than his own spirit. V'nishmase, and more than his own neshama. U'maser garme lemisa alayu. Moshe Rabbeinu says that it's a son, a child, who loves his parents so much that he's willing to sacrifice himself and to die lemifrak loin, in order to redeem his parents. K'mashe kasa b'macham achar, as stated elsewhere. So there's a child who loves his parents very much. His parents has been taken into captivity, and he wants to help and bring his parents back. So he will do what he can. But at least one thing he's wanting is he wants to be there at their union. He wants to be there and delight in the great simcha of his parents coming together again and finding each other. But then there is a child who is so devoted and so loves his parent that he's willing to die in the process, that he won't even see their joy, but just that they should be there, that the parents should be redeemed. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is discussing. Such a selfless love for Hashem, where the person is willing to sacrifice his life, in a sense, not even be there in the days of Mashiach to watch this. Not even that. Just one thing. This is what Hashem's desire should be fulfilled. And think about that. Would a person be willing to have such mesiras nefesh that they're not even going to be there to watch it. Albeit it should happen. That's the avodah of a tzaddik gomer. And that's all that's on his mind, to do this because of his love for Hashem that is boundless, that has no limit, that goes without an end. Okay. In the end, we're going to complete this next week. He's going to explain how these two things, converting the animal soul completely and making it into turning it into a force of holiness, which is the one reason why they're called Bnei Aliyah, because they elevate the darkness into light. The second reason they're called Bnei Aliyah is because even their Asei Toiv, when they're doing good, they're doing it not for their own sake. They're doing it for Hashem's, for a higher purpose, not in order to cleave to Hashem. These two things are really one. One is derived from the other. They go together. And he's going to explain it, however, with Kabbalistic terminology. So we're going to leave it for Be'ezus Hashem for next class. So Be'ezus Hashem next week, Sunday. Everybody should have a Shavua Tov, a wonderful week, a successful week, a Hatzlacha Diga week, and they should have a happy 9 days.